from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda. Well, as we told you yesterday, Republicans in Congress have finally released their specific plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. In California, which has seen a successful Obamacare rollout, many health advocates are worried. Their concerns include the loss of billions of federal dollars that now flow into the state. They're concerned the uninsured rate will spike. And health policy wonks like Anthony Wright of Health Access California says the funding cuts might save federal taxpayers money, but
a lot of this is shifting costs back down to states, back down to counties, back down to providers of last resort.
Congressional Republicans say the funding cuts are part of a plan that emphasizes consumer choice. Wright says you have to have money to have that choice, and instead many sick people will again turn to care at emergency rooms, government clinics, and even jails. Now, one of those public hospitals is Zuckerberg San Francisco General. We sent reporter Laura Clivens to the cornerstone of San Francisco's medical safety net to see what they think of the proposed GOP plan.
Primary care doctor Alice Chen pulls out a blue box she keeps high up on a file cabinet in her office.
What's in this box?
It's just patient and staff thank you cards.
She finds the green and gold card she's looking for and starts to read. She says this is what it sounds like when an uninsured patient finally gets coverage.
I feel enormously fortunate to have been granted such a willing and able team to support me during such a tough period. I actually miss that sometimes.
Chen says the writer isn't who comes to mind when you think of the uninsured. This patient was a barista working on a novel, but wasn't quite poor enough to get Medi-Cal back before Obamacare.
There's a whole invisible group of people out there who want insurance, you know, want to pay their dues, can't afford it unless we structure the system right.
Chen is concerned the Republican plan will leave people like the letter writer and hundreds more uninsured once again. Chen walks me to her clinic, where nurse Philippa Doyle is taking a lunch break.
If Medi-Cal expansion is capped, then some of our patients will not be insured. And because we treat everybody, then our reimbursement will go down significantly and we won't be able to provide the resources that we are currently.
I ask her what resources exactly.
Fewer nurses, fewer medical assistants, fewer clerks, less primary care.
That's because under the GOP plan, San Francisco General is expected to lose tens of millions of dollars in government support every year. For the California Report, I'm Laura Clivens.
President Trump's vision of a border wall is getting closer to being real. Design proposals are due to the Department of Homeland Security by this Friday. But where that money is going to come from to pay for it is still unclear. Trump has repeatedly promised to make Mexico pay for the wall. He said one way of doing that would be to target remittances. That's money sent home by Mexicans living abroad. From San Diego, KPBS reporter Jean Guerrero has the story.
50-year-old Teresa Gomez works at a grocery store in the San Diego neighborhood of Barrio Logan, organizing merchandise and working the cash register.
Okay, gracias. Listo.
She reserves a third of every paycheck for her aging mother, who lives in the Mexican state of Jalisco.
Yo siempre he sido el sostén de mi mamá.
I'm the one who provides for my mom. I'm the one who takes care of her, helps her buy her food, pay for the doctor, everything she needs.
Her mother, Carmen, has heart problems and lacks health insurance in Mexico. Gomez immigrated to the U.S. as a teenager with the dream of supporting her. She sends her $400 twice a month at a small money transfer shop called El Frijolito.
That's $400.
Gomez is one of millions of immigrants who send money to family in Mexico. El Frijolito charges a fee of $5 or $10, depending on the desired exchange rate. Some people use larger transfer companies like Western Union. Last year, remittances surged to an all-time record of $27 billion. California sent the largest chunk, $8 billion. The surge is due in part to President Trump's threats to target remittances as a way of forcing Mexico to pay for his planned border wall, which experts estimate could cost upwards of $20 billion. Gordon Hansen, dean of UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy, says a ban or tax on remittances would have to be broadly applied.
It would be basically a tax on electronic transfers. Now, the thing is, what's the difference between an electronic transfer that is a remittance versus a transfer between two business entities. On paper, they look identical.
As a result, he says, it would hurt not just people who are in the country illegally, but the entire San Diego economy that relies on migrant labor, people who work in the tourism industry, care for yards, or clean homes. For example, Gomez is a dual U.S. and Mexican citizen. She lives in a small apartment with her bird, a conure parrot. She says she would find a way to send money to her mother no matter what.
As a human being, or rather, as a Mexican, nothing is impossible.
If need be, she could cross the border into Tijuana to transfer the money. But for immigrants who live far from the border or who lack legal status, it's more complicated.
Yeah, así.
Marina is a 37-year-old immigrant who asked us to keep her identity secret for fear of deportation. She cleans houses and takes care of a 2-year-old girl, taking her on walks and reading to her. Marina also supports her sick mother in Mexico. She sends money every month for medicines and food.
I never go out. It's rare for me to go watch a movie or eat with a friend. Almost always, I'm working.
She says Trump's threats scare her because her mother depends on her. If Trump wants to build a wall, Marina says, he should do it.
I respect the new president because this is simply not my nation.
But she hopes Trump finds another way to pay for it, because she can't afford it. For the California Report, I'm Jean Guerrero in San Diego.
Stop thinking about the most powerful man in this country and start thinking about the most vulnerable people in our city.
That's L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti last night after winning re-election, reminding people that all politics are local. But his plea for Angelenos to focus on municipal issues instead of what's happening in Washington seems to have fallen on deaf ears. To talk about that and turnout and some notable results, we're joined now from L.A. by KPCC politics reporter Mary Plummer. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
So what was turnout like for this March election?
So turnout, unfortunately, was very low. Semi-official results showed just 11% of registered voters participated. That's a really low number. As a point of comparison, it's about 3 percentage points lower than the preliminary results back in 2013. That's the primary when Garcetti first ran for the mayorship. And this is the last March election, actually, for the city of Los Angeles. The city is going to move to consolidate its elections, and many expect this in the future to increase voter turnout.
Now, how did national issues, and specifically the election of Donald Trump and the administration of Donald Trump, play out on the local level?
So a lot of folks had sort of speculated that that might have a big increase on voter turnout, but we really didn't end up seeing that. At least that appears to be the case from these semi-official results. You know, there's certainly been a lot of protests in L.A. Following the November election. I think a lot of folks have been much more politically active, but it just didn't seem to translate when we look at voter turnout for this March primary.
Now, we talked earlier in the week with your colleague Josie Wong about Measure S, a proposed development freeze in Los Angeles. Tell us how that went.
So Measure S, you know, the LA Times called this the most high-profile land use initiative that's come before voters in 30 years. Measure S needed a majority vote to pass, but the semi-official results show voters said no to Measure S in a really big way. 69% voted no on this, 31% voted yes. So this appears to be soundly defeated.
Now, is there anything that surprised you about these election results?
You know, I think Garcetti's margins are really notable. By all accounts, these are really strong early numbers. 81% of voters so far are backing Garcetti. His most high-profile challenger, that's a political consultant named Mitchell Schwartz, has just about 8% of the vote so far. He only received about 20,000 votes. You know, everyone expected Garcetti to win this one, but the question was really by how much. Interesting to kind of use this as a measure of his popularity here in Los Angeles. And with 81% of voter support so far, it appears other candidates really haven't made a dent in Garcetti for this one.
Now, this shift of election dates means that Eric Garcetti is going to serve a 5.5-year term. You just noted how popular he is. He's somebody who seems to be very telegenic and very radiogenic when he joins us on the program. Has he made any promises to stay at City Hall until 2022? Or is there any word about whether he's looking at a possible statewide run?
So Garcetti has said, you know, that he loves his job, that he's very focused on his second term. But he has also, you know, said on record that he's not ruling out a run for higher office. As you mentioned, Garcetti has been widely considered for other seats, thought that he might be pursuing possibly a run for governor in 2018, or that he could be a candidate for California's U.S. Senate seat if Senator Dianne Feinstein were to retire.
Mary Plummer from KPCC going over the election results from the city of Los Angeles. Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Moving on now, new research finds that the number of people crossing the border illegally has declined so much that now the majority of undocumented immigrants are coming on visas and staying longer than they were supposed to. KQED's Zadie Stavely reports.
California has more people who overstayed visas than any other state. Close to 900,000 people. That's about a third of the total number of undocumented immigrants in the state. But a new report by the Center for Migration Studies in New York shows that this group is now the majority of new undocumented immigrants coming to the U.S. In 2014, twice as many people overstayed visas than crossed the border without papers.
I would think that California probably reflected the rest of the country.
Bob Warren is co-author of the study. It shows the main reason for this trend is that the number of people crossing the border without permission is declining dramatically. Warren says the data begs the question whether investing an estimated $21 billion or more in a border wall is cost-effective.
We're already putting a lot of effort into it. And, you know, the question is, if you add one more billion dollars, how many people do you deter?
Warren and his co-author argue that money would be better spent on visa screening and refugee processing. But those who support tougher immigration enforcement say it's not an either-or question. In a written statement, a spokesman for Central Valley Republican Devin Nunes says the congressman believes border security and enforcement of visa laws both have to be part of immigration reform. For the California Report, I'm Zadie Stavely.
Support for the California Report comes from Robotham International, providing strategic tax, accounting, and business advisory services to global families, entrepreneurs, and venture-backed companies. Robotham.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, honoring the recipients of the 2017 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. Learn more at irvine.org.
Today is International Women's Day, and there are events to celebrate women as well as protest the Trump administration planned throughout Northern California. Now, earlier this week, feminist Gloria Steinem stopped at San Francisco's Brava Theater and urged women to keep meeting up publicly.
Talking to each other, telling each other our stories, you know, plotting subversion. because I think everything comes out of us, you know, talking to each other, being in that primordial group around a campfire, telling our stories.
Well, as we think about stories, we want to know what stories you think we should be covering and how we should be covering them. You can drop us a line at calreport@kqed.org. You can call us and leave a message at 510-736-2254. Or you can tweet me. I'm at JohnLGC. I might even make you my best friend. That's the California Report for Wednesday, March 8th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.